Welcome to Druid Wisdom, the podcast of the Ancient Order of Druids in America. I am Dave, an apprentice in the AODA, and I love doing this podcast because I get to speak with the cool members in our order.
My name is Kira. I am an apprentice in the AODA, and I am sweating it out in my closet right now, talking to the cool people of our order.
The Ancient Order of Druids in America, or AODA, is a modern Druid order rooted in the Druid Revival. AODA understands Druidry as a path of nature spirituality and inner transformation founded on personal experience rather than dogmatic belief. AODA welcomes people of all national origins, cultural and linguistic backgrounds, races, genders, abilities, and affiliations with other Druidic and spiritual traditions. Ecological awareness and commitment to an earth-honoring lifestyle, celebrations of the cycle of nature through seasonal ritual, and personal development through meditation and other spiritual exercises form the core of its work. An involvement in the art, natural sciences, and traditional esoteric studies are among its applications and expressions. AODA places a special emphasis on wildcrafting druidry to be rooted in local ecosystems and developing rituals and symbolism that ties directly to where you live. In addition to AODA's flexible curriculum, which comprises of 3 degrees, members may also choose to join the Gnostic Celtic Church, which offers spiritual discernment, dedicated religious practice, and ordination of clergy. For more information about the AODA, visit aoda.org. AODA's podcast focuses on exploring the many aspects of modern Druidry through interviewing Druids from many walks of life. By hearing each other's stories and sharing about our paths, we are able to understand and document how diverse modern Druid practices are. By sharing the stories of various AODA Druids, we can all come to a deeper understanding of our living tradition, build our tradition in new ways, and explore how our values and practices allow for meaningful connection with nature.
Tonight we are chatting with Jack Campbell. Jack Campbell joined the AODA in 2017, finding his spiritual home in Druidry. He earned the degree of a Druid Apprentice in 2018. Druid Companion in 2020, and Druid Adept in 2022. His Druid Adept project combined herbalism with sigil creation to form practical magic workings within the AODA Grove Ritual. In 2021, Jack was named Grand Almoner and then later consecrated as a bishop within the Gnostic Celtic Church. That year, he also took on the role of curriculum coordinator, assisting AOD candidates with their self-study plans. In 2022, Jack was named Archdruid of Air and Preceptor of the Gnostic Celtic Church. He works with novitiates and deacons as they progress as GCC clergy and also oversees the service-oriented priesthood. In 2023, Jack was named Archdruid of Fire. Jack is also a writer of dark fiction and poetry and has earned master's degrees in both literature and creative writing. Welcome, Jack.
Thank you for joining us, Jack.
You are welcome.
We will light a candle and recite the following together. We come together at this time and place,
each of us with a different path and pace. We open our hearts and minds to explore, growing our knowledge more and more. We come together without judgment or malice. We encourage the growth of all those around us. All who join are part of the grove. May the knot of Druid friendship be wove. Can we kick it off with your Druid name? I know you've explained it somewhere on one of the forums, but I'd love to go into your Druid name.
Sure. So my Druid name is Rukas Siarkal, which... more or less, it means circle crow in Scotch Gaelic. The way that that actually came up was that early on, whenever I was first getting into paganism in general, I'd actually read a couple of Wicca books by Scott Cunningham, who's sort of the Bob Ross of paganism. Yeah. You know, he kind of convinces you all that you too can paint the pretty trees and stuff, right? So I'd read the book that everybody reads by, you know, Wicca for the Solitary Practitioner, and it had really kind of resonated with me. So I went out into the woods near my house to this park, and I was going out there with the intention of just opening myself up spiritually to nature, to following it wherever it would happen to lead. So I came down into the woods, and the first thing that I saw was this crow, and this crow is just sitting on top of this tree, cawing at me, like looking at me and cawing. So I greet the crow because I've decided that I'm going to, you know, interact with nature. I'm going to be open to whatever happens. And it takes off down path. So I followed it down the path, and I found it now on top of a tree. And this tree was actually dead. It didn't have a top anymore, but in the process of after its death, it had essentially become this habitat for all these other things. And there is all these thorns growing up around it. There was all these vines growing on it. It was this lush life that was on top of this dead tree trunk. And I recognized that at that time as essentially being symbolic of life and death and rebirth and all these things that I had been reading about. And I recognized that and thanked the crow for leading me there. And then it went further down the path. So I followed it again, and it led me over this little creek that I had to kind of walk across some sticks to get to the other side. And then it veered off down away from the path. And when I looked down in the direction it went, I saw that there was actually kind of a hidden path that cut down across another small creek. And there was this little island that had been cut off from all because of all the running water on both sides. And somebody had a little stone circle in it, like a fire pit. And it had never been used or anything like that. But there was just this island with these trees kind of growing out kind of sideways, almost like fingers in the palm of a hand. Mm-hmm. I crawled down through the foliage, down through this path that was kind of hidden. I jumped over the creek and I stood there. The crow caught at me again. So for the first time as a nature religious practitioner, I guess, I prayed as a pagan, right? As soon as I was done, the crow left. I went back to my house and I had my first druid ritual that was comprised of, I didn't have anything to use. So I had a couple of birthday candles that I stuck into a slice of bread for my altar. I used a butter knife as my epheme. I had this super powerful ritual on what turned out to be the day of the full moon, but I didn't know that at the time. After this experience, I was reading about religious names in Raymond Buckland, who's another big Wicca author, and he was talking about numerology and having a name that numerically breaks down to the same number as your actual name. And when I was doing this and I was looking at my various Gaelic words for crow and for circle, I discovered that Rukas Siarkal breaks down to the exact same number as Jack Campbell. So it's numerically identical to my name, which for a lot of occult people would say that makes the traits of it identical as well. So that's actually how I came up with my druid name. I know that not everybody has such a grandiose story for it. Some people just like the names, but in my case, it was kind of almost given to me, I guess.
That's so incredible when you have this magical experience following through the forest and you've had this open heart and open mind. That's pretty incredible experience to kick off your new identity.
It's so hard as modern people to really do that, right? We've been taught to close ourselves off to this idea of like enchantment and wonder, and that everything is just a coincidence or everything is, you know, meaningless in some way. So to allow yourself permission to essentially look for signs and to follow things in new directions, that's something that a lot of modern people don't really get to experience. And I think that's one of the things that when people first discover druidry or any spiritual path that's similar to it, that's one of the gifts we really give people, is that ability to, you know, a sense of wonder about the world again.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Because yeah. We're all kind of born with that. And then somehow we just kind of put it away. And it's so grand when we can rediscover that.
Mm. Yeah. At some point we stop asking why.
Yeah.
Yeah. When my kid was literally little, he would ask me why constantly. And one of the things I always tried to do was actually have an answer for that. So if I could find an answer, I would give him some sort of explanation, because I think that sometimes we shut down that why so early that we stop asking it ourselves, essentially.
Yeah, I take the same approach, and thank God for Google, where I'm like, ooh, I don't know. Let's look it up. You know, let's find resources. Let's get a book from the library. Let's watch a video, because I also have that curiosity. And so I like to learn things right alongside. And it's humbling that I don't have all the answers. I don't know everything. And let's discover this together.
And that's really the beauty of having a child, is the ability to learn some of the things over again, to remember things that you forgot, to rediscover books that you loved as a child, like The Monster at the End of This Book with Grover in it was my favorite book as a little kid. And that was something I could share with my son whenever he was a little kid. And like you said, like, it's, we live in an age where there's information all around us, but so many times we don't actively seek it. Having a reason to go to Google or to go to any kind of research and really allow yourself to keep learning things about things that you don't even know anything about is really kind of a cool thing.
So we ask everybody this question. We all know the joke, you know, asked five druids, you'll get at least 10 different answers. What's your definition of druidry?
To me, druidry is really a couple of things. One is that druidry is a search for balance. And a lot of us have spent most of our lives out of balance. And especially for me, before I discovered druidry, I was having a hard time with stress, with burnout, especially being in law enforcement, where I had seen some things, been around some things. It was really hard for me to stay balanced in my life. So balance is an important part of, I think, AODA's magical framework, if you want to call it that, with the SOP and the elements and the things like that. But the other part of it is that I've always said that druidry is a reflection of the person who practices it. Mm. And this actually goes back to the very beginnings of, like, I would say, modern druidry, particularly if you think of the friendship between like Gerald Gardner and Ross Nichols. Mm-hmm. I was listening to a podcast one time. I think it was actually Druidcast, and they had a guy on, and he was talking about how Ross Nichols and Gerald Gardner were these two guys, and they were very good friends. They talked about similar things, but they had two very different perspectives on life. Their approach to the same sort of thing essentially gave birth to two things. It gave birth to Wicca, which was Gardner's kind of like impassioned sensory perspective on life, and then druidry in terms of like Obod druidry, which was Ross Nichols' more poetic and academic approach to life. So I think that druidry is essentially how we interact with the world from this place of balance, to where we begin to see ourselves reflected back to us in the way that we experience the world. So my druidry is always going to be different than Dana's druidry. It's always going to be different than Claire's druidry, et cetera. And that's, I think, why you see so much change in AODA since John Michael Greer has no longer been a part of it, is that so much of what we had been recently had been built on a reflection of JMG. And now you're starting to see a broader reflection of a broader group of people, which I think is going to make it a very cool thing in the future, because we're all doing things right now that I can't even get into all of them because of the initiatory order type of aspects of things. But we're doing a lot of cool things that are going to expand the order, expand how we experience druidry within AODA.
Yeah, you've really encapsulated the individuality and the wildcrafting that we so often think about and talk about, because that is the embodiment of everyone's different paths. And I think that's what sparks even this podcast of talking to individuals, and we're going to have a different conversation each and every time with different experiences. And it's so powerful looking for those similarities and all the differences that we have.
Yeah. And if you ever, like, if you get books on Druidry, like I have, I don't even know how many books on Druidry. I have a bit of a book problem, but, but every book on Druidry is a little bit different. Penny Billington's is different than Christopher Hughes, is different than John Michael Greer's, is different than Brendan Myers or anyone else. Like, we've all taken this inspiration and we've applied it to our lives, and it's formed itself in different ways. And if I write a book on Druidry, it'll be entirely different than the ones I've read before. And it's this amazing reflection that I think also goes into, you know, in terms of the Gnostic Celtic Church, when we talk about the gnosis of nature, part of the gnosis of nature is what you're finding out about yourself as much as it is about nature. It's that whole occult idea of as above, so below, as within, so without, is that by observing nature, by interacting with nature, we learn more about ourselves as individuals. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the reflection of the practitioner. Yeah. Would you write a book about Druidry?
I actually have plans on doing such. One of the things that we've talked about in terms of in the Arch Druid meetings is that I would like to write more about philosophies of the Gnostic Celtic Church, but also about Druidry as a whole, and kind of add to that, add to the tradition, expand the tradition. So one of the things that we've tried to do, because we've expanded so much, is that we have a new curriculum coordinator who's going to be starting to take that over from me so that I have more time in order to work on that sort of thing. I have this idea essentially that I'm thinking about doing. It's called the Druid's Book of Days. Essentially, it would take you through an entire year of basic Druidry, learning elements a little bit at a time in terms of Druid philosophy, meditation, ritual stuff around AUDA. Also, just little things that I would write in order to do discursive meditation around and things of that nature. That's one that I would really like to do. I would also like to do, I enjoy writing prayers and blessings. I'd like to write a book of prayers or blessings or poems, sort of like John O'Donohue, who's one of my favorite kind of like Celtic spiritual writers. So I'd actually like to write a few different things, but none of them are in progress yet. A lot of them are contingent upon whenever I finally get done with all my classes and things like that. I definitely plan on writing about Druidry, about paganism and things like that in the future.
I'm excited. A lot of people may not know that you are an author in addition to everything else that you do.
Yeah. And that's really my issue, is that I tend to do a lot of different things, and it means that I don't do a whole lot of any one thing. I write dark fiction. Most people would call me a horror writer, but it hasn't always been horror. But I write dark fiction and poetry, and I've been published in probably about 24 different venues between online and in print. And I have master's degrees in both literary criticism and in fiction writing.
Wow. That's very impressive.
Yeah, I enjoy it. It's something that I share with my wife.
Yeah, I've read a few of your stories.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm easy to find with it. I use the same name for writing that I use for everything else. So it's been one of those things that people have gone and found stuff occasionally on me, which, I mean, is fine with me. I don't try to hide anything.
Yeah, I've read a few of your stories on my other podcast, where we'll get together and just share like horror fiction and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we've always thought it was so well written and so like inspiring too.
Yeah, I love writing. It's one of those things that I've always gotten a rush out of creative things in general. I was studying to be an artist, a visual artist. I wanted to be a motion picture animator for Disney originally, but I do some visual art. Then I was a jazz drummer in college, so I do music and things like that. But I really discovered writing fairly late, especially Ray Bradbury, who I found to just be an amazingly inspiring person in terms of grasping that kind of romantic side of writing, just the joy of putting words on paper. And I love the process of writing. Honestly, I don't really care so much what happens to my writing once I'm done with it. Like, I submit it, and if people want to read it and they enjoy it, I'm glad by that. But I really enjoy the grind of writing, you know, the getting the words on the paper, the editing of them, the day-to-day work of it really provides me a lot of joy.
I think you need a biography of your life. Yeah, layers, the onion layers of Jack Campbell's life.
Yeah, some people have called me a jack of all trades, pun intended, or one time in a interview for a job that went way too long, the person eventually called me a Renaissance man. They say, like, it seems like you're into everything. I don't like putting that much. That always seems more elitist than I would like, but I enjoy a lot of different things, and I'm very open to always finding new things to enjoy. I think that's also one of the benefits of Druidry, is it's allowed me to explore a lot of things that, you know, I might not have otherwise.
Yeah. And you're such a wealth of knowledge when it comes to anyone asking questions, like on the forum or Discord, like there you are with the answer. So I love how open you are with just supporting our community in general all the information you have. It's really inspiring.
Yeah, I'm horribly addicted to knowledge. And whenever I get into something, like, I really get into it. When I got into Druidry, I wanted to learn everything I possibly could about it. And I've always said that I know logically that I'm never going to know all there is to know in the world, but I'm going to make a valiant effort at it.
I think you have. I think you're off to a great start.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the reasons I was asked to do the curriculum stuff and then later to join the Grand Grove, is that they really appreciated, like, the amount of work I put in to understand the history of Druidry, of AODA, of various forms of, you know, magic or meditation or anything else. I have an addiction to learning, and that's why I actually have, essentially, I think I'm working on degree number 5 or 6 right now. All of that's because I like to always be pushing my brain in new ways and learning new things. And that's really easy whenever you're into paganism and occultism and Druidry as a whole, is that you have thousands of years of knowledge to essentially try to learn, right?
Yeah, that kind of leads into the next question, is how have you modified the Druid revival philosophy into modern life?
The way I like to think about the Druid revival and the philosophies that they had is to think in terms of what they were dealing with at the time. You know, you're talking about people that were in the middle of essentially an industrial age where they're starting to really wonder what they're doing to the world. And I mean, that's a question we really haven't answered very well, even to this point, in terms of what we're going to do about it. But they were dealing with this industrial area where they felt disconnected from nature, where they felt disconnected from the past, because everything was essentially the present building upon this future of progress that they kept pushing towards. So the Druid revival that took place around the same time they started finding some of this stuff about their history and about the proto-Druids, much of it which was incorrect, allowed them to essentially break from that mindset that they had constantly been then fed towards progress, towards industry, towards disconnection. And it helped them to find connection with each other, to find connection with nature, and to find connection with the past, with these ancestors that they really didn't know much about, the people that came before them in the British Isles. When I look at the Druid revival and when I look at where we are now, we're really dealing with a lot of the same things in terms of that feeling of disconnection. You know, we've never been more connected with other people, but we've also never been so disconnected from, like, our neighborhoods and from the people in our lives. And while we still push towards that progress and we still think so much about the future, when we really need an excuse sometimes to slow down, to take stock in where we are, to appreciate where we've been, how far we've come. I've always tried to apply that sort of philosophy. These people didn't feel connected in their life. They didn't feel like they were doing the thing that they were meant to do. So they were able to find this other path that helped them feel more like themselves, right? To be more at peace with themselves. And I think that that's sort of what we're still doing, is we're trying to connect with one another, to connect with nature, but also to connect on that piece of self within us that understands that we've lost something, and that if we find it again, that it can be a better place, that we can be better people.
I totally agree with the connecting with your community. And I think we're so lucky that we have so many different outlets in the AODA, and probably more coming soon in order to connect. But I have really found that that nature contact, and exactly what you said of slowing down, is just so helpful for me to like get back to basics and to slow down, connect with nature. And then I'm able to connect with myself and find that peace.
And the other piece of that is that in nature, like that feeling that we constantly have to push ourselves forward, which I know I'm going to be hypocritical at this point because I've said so much about how I need to constantly be learning, constantly be pushing. The nature teaches us that it's not just a constant grow thing, right? Is that people as well as nature, we have periods where all we can manage is just the bare minimum of what we're going to do every day, because that's all we're going to have energy for. Just like in winter, you don't have a lot of growth in nature. Things recede within themselves, but things always come back again. They always grow again. And that's one of those things that taking that moment and appreciating nature, slowing down and appreciating ourselves is totally a normal cycle of things. And without it, we can really burn out really fast.
Yeah, it's definitely easy to do with how fast paced life can be. And so it is nice to give myself permission to slow down and make it a priority, because without it, then it's just overwhelming.
As somebody who struggles with depression, I find it very reassuring you saying that comes and goes in like waves, and that's absolutely okay. You know, if sometimes all you can do is like the bare minimum, like your dailies for the day, then hey, that's still doing something.
Yeah, and that's actually something I've written a little bit about on the forums before, and also a little bit on my blog, is that I've set daily minimums, my daily like what's reasonable to do every day, and then also my daily and weekly ideal. And I don't always reach the ideal. Some days I don't even reach the medium. And then I also have to always remember to sometimes step back and reevaluate my minimum, because fairly recently I determined that my minimum wasn't actually good enough, because I felt myself slipping a little bit to having a little bit of a rough patch, you know. The thing about balance is that we talk about balance like it's this thing that you reach it and you're in perfect Zen, you know, moment. But the truth is that if you ever watch somebody standing on one leg, they can seem perfectly balanced, but there's all these little muscles that are shaking and fighting to maintain that balance. And I think that we don't talk about that enough, when, especially in terms of like, I mean, I'm a druid adept, I'm an arch druid, but I still struggle with maintaining that balance. It's a day-to-day constant grind of work to keep myself like that. And we all deal with that. And the arch druids aren't immune to it. Nobody's immune to it. But people see us and they think we're just standing there perfectly balanced, when in fact, sometimes, you know, we're getting pretty shaky there standing on one leg.
Yeah, it definitely humanizes what we're all experiencing, and that life gets in the way of perfection, right? We're perfectly imperfect in any moment, and sometimes just the bare minimum is enough, and it's okay. We're granting ourselves permission to do what we can.
And then having the great community that we do, you know, we can always lean on each other and have others lean on us as well.
Yeah, and I think that that's been one of the most important things that I've had the privilege of offering to people within, especially within the Gnostic Celtic Church, and dealing with people that are kind of exploring their spirituality, exploring their religious practice, is to let them know that it's okay to feel like you're not entirely sure, to feel like you're struggling. And in fact, in the Gnostic Celtic Church, when we talk about the rule of Awen, finding and following your own Awen, we expect that to not always be a straightforward thing, to not always know exactly where you're going. You know, I came into AODA and GCC as a practicing Wiccan. Now I'm a hard polytheist, and that is considered to be an entirely normal transition. If I was in any other church, that would not be taken well. If let's say I was in Baptist seminary and I came in one day and I said, I want to start praying to the Catholic saints, they would say, well, Baptist seminary is not probably the place for you. But in Druidry, that idea of feast and famine, of the cycles of trying new things, and some of them will work, some of them won't. All of that is considered to be just part of being a seeker of this path.
If you're open to it, I'd like to hear more about your Druid Adept project, combining the herbalism with sigil creation and forming practical magic workings within our Grove Ritual.
Yeah, absolutely.
Outstanding.
Yeah, so it was something that I came up with fairly early on, and I presented a couple of different things to Dana, and that was the one that she was very interested in. One of the magic systems that I've spent a lot of time researching is chaos magic, particularly sigil creation. It speaks really well to the symbolic nature of, like, I was a visual artist. You know, I liked abstract art. I liked kind of these symbols that kind of speak to you on a level that's a little more than just at a literal level. So I'd really gotten into this idea of sigil magic. At the same time, I really was doing a lot of stuff with herbalism in terms of the properties of various herbs, using them for, like, I make my own incense, I dress my own candles, things like that. And I thought that one of the things that we really don't have a whole lot of in AODA and within our particular magic system is the practical magic that you see in witchcraft and that you see in chaos magic, where you're going after a specific goal versus essentially a century ceremonial magic, which is more about your finding your higher self, building talismans, things like that. I was really interested in seeing what I could do to bring kind of some elements of witchcraft that I had used into Druidry. I did a lot of research and meditation in terms of magic and what it means to me and how I think it functions, how I think it functions within, like, the AODA Grove. And then I did a lot of research involving candle magic. Raymond Buckland, who I mentioned earlier, was a big influence on that. A lot of different herbal guides I used that were involved, and there's bunches of them, so I don't even think I can name them all, but I think his name is Peter Beryl was one of them that was a big part of that. Scott Cunningham, who is obviously an early influence for me. So essentially my Adept project combines a lot of the elements that I myself had used a lot in terms of sigil magic coupled with candle magic coupled with herbalism, and creating what are called herbal petitions. And what an herbal petition is just a piece of paper that has herbs within it. I inscribe a sigil on that, and then I package it kind of like a little envelope. And when you light it on fire, and I drop it into a cauldron, which essentially is like symbolic of the cauldron of Anun. So in some of the Druid revival philosophy stuff, Awen interacts with the cauldron of Anun in order to essentially give rise to creation. So this is essentially symbolically reenacted by my dropping what is essentially Nuivra that I've shaped in a particular way into this cauldron, and then manifesting within the SOP, which is this sacred center where you're connected to essentially, you know, the cosmos, right?
Good.
A big part of that project was actually the correspondence tables, because there's I have large correspondence tables for each of the herbs that I had, for candle colors, for planetary hours, and what's good for different times. And I've never thought you have to have all these things in order to have a successful magical ritual or to, you know, have a successful spell. But I feel like the more things that you align, the harder you have to work in terms of energetically to get the same effect.
Right, right. Now, I absolutely love that idea of incorporating in it. Because there's the whole philosophy of like the all imposing on the void, and then like essentially creating like the Big Bang Theory, the first act of creation in the cosmos. And tapping into that through magic is so powerful.
Yeah, and in fact, I mean, when you get down to it, most magic and most ritual is essentially that. It's a recreation of creation. You know, I've always said that when we do the Grove ritual within AODA, what we're actually doing is setting ourselves in the center of time and place. You know, you have east, south, and west, and north, but you also have spring and summer and fall and winter. And it's essentially when you bring all those elements together with the telluric current, with the solar current, all of this is essentially a reenactment of creation. And you see that same thing in a lot of different practices, especially within magic. I'm also a member of Arnriacht Fane, and we have an element in the Arnriacht Fane ritual process that's called the recreation of the cosmos, which is about the interaction of fire and water and the structure being held together by essentially this sacred tree or other kind of like structure, depending on the culture that it's dealing with at the time. But you see the same thing in a lot of different religions and a lot of different rituals. And I think that's where our magic is the most potent, is the idea that we're essentially connecting to that moment of creation symbolically, and we're kind of connecting to the power of what of how that works, because that same process works in all of our acts of creation. Even if, you know, when I'm writing a story, like I could easily track it from east with the inspiration to it to north with the manifestation of when the story is finally finished. Everything we do is an act of creation, and it can provide us a lot of power within magic as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm reading a book about Marie Laveau and voodoo, and so much of that is also the act of creation with the local herbs. And it goes to like our local ecology, you know, like she was using things that are found in the South and that you get to make that your own depending on where your bioregion is. So yeah, there's so many parallels to the different religions and historical rituals that have been done for so many different alignments, as you said.
And that's one of the real benefits of being the sort of druidry that we are, is that you're able to draw from a lot of different religions and a lot of different practices. I've been reading quite a bit of Shinto in terms of those practices, those beliefs. I actually read a lot about Thelema, which was actually very helpful in terms of illustrating to me some other mechanisms and some concepts of finding and following your own Awen and its potential parallels to the idea of true will that are used in Thelema. In GCC especially, we read books from a lot of different backgrounds, even from Christianity and Buddhism and different things like that. And I've always found that I think that we're all basically looking for the same thing. We're seeking the same thing, but we are experiencing it in different ways. So I find a lot of value in a comparative religious approach to it.
Do you want to talk more about the other Druid organizations you're connected with?
Yeah, sure. So primarily, other than AODA, which these days AODA takes a lot of my time, just being an Archdruid and the Gnostic Celtic Church preceptor, I'm also a member of Arnriacht Fane. And within that, I am currently studying as an initiate and as clergy within that tradition. I'm also a Bardic member of the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids. I've finished the Bardic degree. I just need to do their exam and things like that. I'm an Ovate in the Druidic Order of the Golden Dawn, which was part of my first degree candidate exploration. There's pieces of that that I don't practice as much anymore, but one of the things that I found really exciting in that was Spagyrics, which is like herbal alchemy, and then also geomancy, which I still use a lot. I mean, I'm probably in some other druid orders too, because I think at times I've signed up for like the Henge of Keltria, and I've signed up for the British Druid Order and different things like that, in terms of study and just other resources, learning other things. But the ones that I spend the most time in terms of practice are AODA, ADF, and then I also do like the light body exercise from the Order of Bards, Novates, and Druids every day as well. But that's kind of the order, I guess, of the hierarchy of how much time they take and how much time I spend on the practice. AODA is always going to be the thing that I spend the most time with, and it's always going to be the thing that's my primary responsibility. But ADF, I found a lot of use for in terms of how I work with my shrine within my like everyday practice, and in how I approach my ideas of the divine in terms of there's ancestor veneration, there's relationships with nature spirits, which is obviously a big deal with me in terms of AODA as well, and then relationships with deities. Mm. Primarily, I work with Irish and occasionally Welsh deities, but all that's kind of part of my ADF practice that's sort of integrated into my AODA and Gnostic Celtic Church practices.
Where do you find the time? You have like a real job, you're an author, you have all of these things, you have family. It's really impressive what you're able to have your hand in, and you're going to school. It's incredible. I assume you just don't sleep. You just do all-nighters every night.
Well, one of the things that I started doing is that I get up every day at about 5:15 a.m. I work at 9 a.m. So I have almost 4 hours in there. And that's a lot of the time that I spend, because like every morning I try to do the Spirit Protection, the Nine Hazels Qigong, the light body exercise, some meditation, some reading, and I try to get all that done front loaded in the beginning of the day. Mm. For a couple of reasons. One is that if I do it, then it gets done. If I put it off, it doesn't. But the other reason is that one of the things that I found was burning me out as a police officer was that I felt like I woke up every day to go to work, and then I went home and I waited to go back to work again. And that wasn't healthy for me. So now I don't get up to go to work. I get up to practice druidry and to experience life, to learn and create. And work just happens to be an activity I do during the day. There's some days it's harder than others, but a lot of the time that I've found is beginning of the day. And also, I don't spend a ton of time watching television or anything like that anymore. You can get a lot done whenever you start looking at the various times in the day that you can kind of nip and tuck things. But at the same time, there's a lot of stuff that I feel like I don't get done that I wish I could get more done. And I just have to prioritize, such as in terms of ADF and the initiate and clergy stuff, that slowed down significantly whenever I started doing more stuff for AODA for the Grand Grove, when I started this business program, which I hope would be beneficial to the order and to me, obviously, at some point. So those are things I try to move on when I can, although it's more slowly. And so far, the ADF people that I've worked with have been very supportive of it, because many of them are also members of AODA and are aware of some of the other things I'm doing, aware of some of the other things I'm working on. And they're very supportive of what they feel I'm like adding to Druidry as a whole. Like,
I just absolutely loved when you said that you've now focused your days on getting up in order to do druidry. I just love that.
Yeah, and so much of life is perspective, right? Very little of my life actually changed between druidry and non-druidry. But the fact is that the way I look at life has changed versus dwelling upon these negative things that were happening, these negative interactions that I'm always going to have because of the nature of my job. There's people that are always going to not like the police. I'm always going to come into contact with people who are going to have a negative experience with me just because of what we're doing. But at the same time, I can change the way that I look at life, and I can change the way that I approach work and the way that I perceive the things around me, how I perceive others. And that's really what, when we talk about magic and when we talk about what we're really doing, I think that that's one of the coolest things about it, is that that small shift in perception between getting up to live life versus getting up to go to work, even if you're just, if you're still going to work regardless, that change in perception can be a huge difference. And that little change in perception can change everything that happens to you that day. And one of the big debates in magic is always, am I changing my consciousness or am I changing the world around me through my will? And the truth is that I'm not even entirely sure it matters, because the very act of me changing my consciousness changes the way I interact with the world. And every little thing in life can change around it, because it's all about timing. It's all about balance and perspective. And whenever you have a positive perspective and when you're in balance, it's amazing the number of things that just start going right. The things that just seem brighter and better. And it's that sphere of protection that becomes this like bubble of positivity that suddenly you're approaching life with light instead of negativity.
Like the awakening of the inner senses they talk about with the inner grail.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen people comment before on like JMG's books that it's such a simple thing, this mystery of the grail, but it's also a very transcendental thing. And it's, you're talking about essentially like alchemy of your spirit, alchemy of your personality.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's like balance. It's an ongoing process. I still have negative days. I have days whenever I don't feel up to it, but those days come a lot less often. And my ability to flow within, I guess, the flow of life is just much higher whenever I've got my practices done in the morning, when I am programming myself essentially subconsciously and consciously to look at life in a different way. One of the coolest things I noticed whenever I first got into Wicca is that I live in kind of a suburban area, and I constantly think of it as being mostly houses and streets and cars and all this other stuff. But I was amazed to realize that all of a sudden there are so many trees and there's so much life, and everywhere I look, like in a single foot of my yard, there's massive amounts of life. And I was somehow ignorant of that all the way up until I found Wicca and then Druidry.
So about rediscovering all this wildlife that's all around you, what have you found that's kind of unique to your understanding of the bioregion you're part of?
There was a couple of really cool things that I found out about my bioregion. I live in Kansas, which is really on the edge of deciduous forest, but also like the prairie. And the prairie itself has hardly any trees on it except for near water. And it's just this massive sea of grass that, quite honestly, the settlers who came here at the time thought it looked like a desert, because they were used to seeing all these trees on the East Coast all the way through the United States and what was once one of the largest forests in the world. But one of the interesting things about our landscape here is that a large part of it used to be part of an inland sea. So it was all in the bottom of the water. And we have all this limestone here that is essentially all of this sea life that once existed in Kansas and throughout this area. And we can still sometimes find fossils of this sea life. So even though we're considered to be like, I mean, we're nowhere near the ocean in reality, and I've rarely been to the ocean, I always feel like there's that sense of that life and that sense of the connection to that sea that's around us all the time. The other big thing is that the plains themselves, there's species of grass that actually don't seed unless they're exposed to fire. And originally that was the fire from lightning. And then the native people who lived here would set fires because the grasses would renew and they'd grow green again, and they would bring the buffalo back. Our farmers and ranchers still do that to this day, of essentially burning the old field so that the new field comes up so they can graze their cattle and things like that. But I felt like that I learned a lot in terms of life from that kind of interaction, because so many times, like, you know, in life, we try to keep fostering all of this like dead growth that's not really any use to us anymore, when the most fertile thing is to essentially clear it out and allow it to start again. So that's one of the things that has really been important to me in terms of my bioregion, and one of the things I've really connected to in terms of finally connecting with fire, was connecting through that idea of purification and renewal, essentially.
Oh, I never knew that about that region. I lived there for a little while, for a few years, at when I was in the Army at Fort Riley. And yeah, it's definitely like a desert. That's like why we would train there. But it's like a prairie land.
Yeah.
And yeah, the trees would only be like at the creeks and stuff. But there's just all this open space. And yeah, we would go all through it. And I absolutely love their, like, being out in the field there, like sleeping under the stars. And oh, it was just a great time when I was there.
Yeah. And especially out by Fort Riley in Manhattan, you know, you have the Flint Hills, and it's just these amazing different formations of rocks and land. And you can, and when you think about the, how that was probably the affected by this, by the sea, and how it eroded and descended eventually and things like that. And you could really kind of see in your mind's eye how the settlers would have come out of those trees in my area around Lawrence and coming out past the Ozarks and all that. And they just reached this sea of nothing but grass in every direction and you can see for miles and miles and miles. It's one of those things that I've developed a connection to the Great Plains, to Kansas. And it's something that I talk a lot about whenever I talk to people about ordination, about GCC and AODA, is that a lot of times that curriculum, that candidate curriculum, is an important part of building that relationship. Because ultimately, it's not just Dana, for example, that ordained me and consecrated me in GCC. I was ordained and consecrated in part by the Great Plains. I'd had a sense of that when I came back across the river on the train, when I came back across the Mississippi River, of essentially like I was being essentially welcomed back, just this feeling of connection. And I think that's what people always, they want to rush through the candidate year because they're super excited to learn new things. And they're super excited to do all these projects and read all these books that are in the apprentice grade and to do their explorations and stuff like that. But I think the base of AODA spirituality and the base of Gnostic Celtic church practice is really those 9 books that you read at the very beginning that really help you build that relationship, to build a reciprocal relationship with the land on which you live. Cause that's a big part of your journey.
Oh, absolutely. I was a candidate for a long time before I finally joined the order.
Yeah. And I understand, because I was the same way. I've talked about how I just have an intense drive to learn everything. And that's how everybody is. People tend to devour things too quickly, when it's really like the first degree curriculum has a lot of reasons for it. And personally, I'm very proud of it. I think it's the thing that really separates AODA from other Druid orders, because I mean, you can learn about Druid revival in Obod. You can learn about deity and mythology in ADF or any number of other places. But only in AODA can you really learn about the place you are and how to start building a relationship with it. And that's the thing that I think really makes us unique and is our gift that we, you know, can give the world.
Oh, I think so too. That's one of the things I absolutely love about it, is that it gets you hands-on druidry exactly where you're at. And I guess to call back to the center of the sphere of protection, that Axis Monday, it puts you right in perspective of your own backyard, right? Where you exist in the world is where you express your druidry the most.
Yeah. And that's one of the things about the SOP as well, is like that imagery of the SOP. Each one of those images for air, for fire, for water, and for earth are all my local ecosystem. So for me, air is the wind blowing across those grasses that you've probably seen out in the Flint Hills, right? For me, fire is, as you've also probably seen, is whenever fire stretching in all in, as far as you can see along the horizon, 6 foot tall in these grasslands, just burning in this black, rich black ground behind it. For me, water is the Kansas River, which is right in Lawrence where I live. It was sacred to the native people who lived here, who considered it to be the where their ancestors lived. For me, earth is the forest near here with the moon overhead. And I always think of the smell of the eastern red cedar, even though it's not actually a native plant. It's around here a lot. So it's one of those things that's constantly around. So that SOP is centering me not only within time, space, within that Axis Mundi, but it's also centering me and connecting me specifically to the energies and life of the place I live. But at the same time, I think that all sacred time and all sacred space is essentially connected, so that when I do the SOP, I'm connecting to every time you've done the SOP and the every time anyone in the orders did the SOP, and that we're all connecting. Essentially, our little pieces of our space and our lives are all intertwined. And I think that's where we can really start doing some cool things in terms of like we're doing with the land blessings and things like that, because in those moments, we're all connected in time and space, but we're having a deep personal relationship with where we live as well.
Oh yeah. I believe in the interconnectedness of it all as well. And yeah, it's very, very powerful stuff. Do you have anything you'd like to promote? Like a book, blog, podcast, social media, anything?
People can find me pretty easily. I haven't been real productive with my writing in terms of publication lately. I plan on doing more blogging in terms of my Druid blog as well, although I haven't been active on that as well. And I think I mentioned earlier that at some point there will be a YouTube channel, an official YouTube channel for AODA. We already have some ritual stuff up there, but I'm going to be doing some talking and some discussing on there as well. The biggest thing that I guess I want to promote is just I want to let people know that the Archdruids are spending a lot of time in terms of expanding the tradition, building rituals that are going to be for different levels of the organization that'll be closed to the outside. They'll be closed to lower degrees and things like that. But we're really going to add to what you can do as an adept, what you can do as an apprentice and a companion. This is very much a living tradition. And I think it's a really cool time to be in AODA because so many people are going to be able to be a part of that as we continue to expand, as people continue to develop. So I guess the thing I would promote the most is just AODA and the idea that sort of like life, I mean, we're going to be evolving constantly, and that I'm really looking forward to see where everybody grows it in the future.
Well, I appreciate all the work you do for our order, the GCC, as well as Druidry and humanity as a whole.
You know, the best thing I think we can all do is just try to leave the place a little cleaner than we found it. That's all I can really hope in life is that when I'm done with my career, when I'm done with in terms of AODA, which will hopefully be a long time from now, but that the order will be stronger, that my community will be safer, and that I will have made my time essentially worthwhile.
That is outstanding. Thank you. The AODA has a website, which is aoda.org. We also have a public Discord server, a public forum, and a Facebook group. If you are a member of the AODA and would like to be a guest or contribute music, poetry, stories, philosophy, or other art, please reach out to us at druidwisdompodcast@gmail.com. The artwork for our logo was provided by the Grand Archdruid of our order, Dana O'Driscoll. You can find more of her beautiful and inspiring artwork on Instagram at Druids Garden Art. The music was provided by me. Our podcast Instagram is Druid Wisdom Podcast. All these links will be in the show notes. Please consider leaving us a rating and review on iTunes or Podchaser. Oh, and Google search Jack Campbell if you're interested in reading some of his dark fiction. It is highly recommended. And with that, we are going to turn it back over to Jack so he can take us out. Thank you for listening.
All right, so this is a blessing that I wrote for this particular podcast. One of the ways that I've really started to express Awen just over time, and one of the things I do a lot of is prayer and blessing writing. I've been doing the Prayer a Day project in November and things like that, and I really encourage people to experiment with that kind of thing. But this is a blessing that I wrote for today. May you seek wisdom with every breath. May each inhale be one of knowledge, of the richness of life, and the memory of all those who have breathed the same. May each exhale be one of experience, to share and to speak all that you've learned, to create and expand on what's come before, to provide the breath for those who will follow. May you seek wisdom with every breath.